Welcome to Two Slant Trees, the podcast where a married couple learn to cope differently during social isolation while reading Brené Brown's The Gift of Perfection together. This is episode 6, and today we'll be talking about perfectionism and self-compassion. So
where do we start here? We're going to do the read the news update?
Sure.
Okay.
Here's
my news update. Now it's time for news with Willie. So I read yesterday, that Kraft Canada, they have a plant here in Montreal. And so they're trying to keep maximum production of key life staples. They have Kraft Dinner, obviously, because we're all eating that during this time. And also Cheese Whiz is designated as a core production item. So for all you Cheese Whiz fans, so in our house, Jesse's Cheese Whiz, but I think it's disgusting.
He doesn't actually really allow it in the house.
Yeah. This is true.
But did you know that a while ago, Kraft started fortifying Kraft Dinner macaroni to have vitamin C?
Didn't we just mention this on the podcast the other day?
Maybe, I don't know.
I told someone else about fortifying Kraft Dinner. Because it keeps
you
full.
Did you know that in the States, they don't call it Kraft Dinner. They just call it, like, macaroni in the blue box or something like that? Which is weird to me, right?
Yeah.
It's called Kraft Dinner, people.
Yeah, so if you're in America, but in America they also don't know about Cheese Whiz, because it comes in a spray can there.
Oh yeah, that's so weird.
That is really weird.
So,
like, are there other foods that could come in a spray can?
Ground beef? Ground beef. Don't even.
If cheese can come in a spray, I don't understand. This is things that would not make any sense in France.
Well, Cheese Whiz does not make sense.
That's
in
true.
France.
Cheese in a jar.
Peanut butter doesn't even make sense in France. Anyways.
Yeah, well, that's their loss. I don't feel any shame about that.
I don't feel shame. That's good, because we're growing about that,
oh,
right?
Man, I'm undermining,
like,
our own podcast here. Anyways.
So today, like I said, we're going to be talking about perfection and self-compassion.
So, okay, so I have a question for you then, Jess. Would you call yourself a perfectionist?
I kind of want to laugh at that question, because there is in no way that I am a perfectionist when it comes to doing things. Like, if you look at our house, you will see that I am not a perfectionist, because it is not tidy at all times, for example. And when I'm working on things, like, no, I'm just kind of the person who wants to move on to the next thing. Get lots of things done, so I do not care about the details one bit. And it irks me when people do care about the details. I'm trying to grow in compassion or in understanding for people who care about details, because we need people to value all of the details to have nice things. But where I have learned that I'm kind of a perfectionist is I just have a really high standard for myself in doing things, like, in behavioral things, I guess, or, like, I don't know, it's weird. I don't get it. I still don't get it, but I've learned that I'm not very kind to myself. And I think I should be perfect, basically.
Yeah.
What about you? Are you a perfectionist?
I hesitate to say yes, because I feel like a lot of people would then look at me and say, well, here's some things you could maybe perfect a little bit more.
Yeah, the real perfectionist.
Like,
look at
no,
us and we're like,
not.
You guys are a bunch of... Like,
or maybe that's just like negative self-talk, right? Where I'm just negatively looking at myself, and I have a higher standard than I really should have for myself.
Yeah.
Although I'm not going to say that's true. I feel like I still need to grow.
Yeah.
Right? I can't just like say, ah, well, I'm just like being a perfectionist. I'll put garbage stuff out in the world. But I will say one thing that helped me a lot. When I was in university, I realized I would procrastinate on essays, actually, because I had such a hard time starting on them.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted it to be all right. You know, I wanted it to be perfect. And then I'd end up writing them the night before.
Oh, me too.
And then I realized I just need to stop worrying about it, because that's just what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Right? I'll just start it the night before, and I'll write it all, like, the day before. And then that's just what it is.
Yeah, me too. For different reasons, though, I think.
Yeah, but it was kind of the only way that I found that I was procrastinating. I needed that desperation to kind of break through my perfectionism to really get things going. And so obviously it really sabotaged my performance, right? So it's like, that's where perfectionism is like, you wouldn't maybe pick it out in someone, because someone who's like actually deeply perfectionistic in the way they're approaching something might be really not very performing at all in their output. So I think I saw that in my life. And so that's where I'm like, I could see myself as a perfectionist, but I've also learned that I don't have the energy to really be a perfectionist. So I started to embrace some of the things where I'm like, no, I'm just going to do the work of the day.
Yeah.
Right? I'm just going to work my hours and get the job done, get something out, and then iterate and make changes. And so be more comfortable with feedback, be more comfortable with having to make changes on the fly and not have it all worked out in advance.
And that has reflected in your email sending, because you don't take 3 hours to write a 2-sentence email anymore.
Not as frequently.
Yeah. But I read a book on procrastination a while ago, because I'm a huge procrastinator.
Yeah.
And I guess an uncompassionate view of myself would be that I'm lazy, but it's like a procrastinator. But anyways, in this book about procrastination, it actually says a lot of times the issue is not like laziness or procrastination, it is perfectionism. Mm-hmm. And you have a person looks at the job and is just like overwhelmed by making it perfect, and so they don't start.
Mm.
Or they self-sabotage because they don't know how to make it perfect. Sort of like what you're doing with your essay writing. It's like, well, I'm never going to be able to, like, or I don't think I can do it perfect or whatever. And then you put it off, and then, well, then you can tell yourself, I'm not saying you, I'm saying one, can tell themselves, well, if I had actually had the full 3 weeks I really needed to do on it, then I could have had it perfect. But it's just that, like, again, yeah, we'll talk about self-compassion later, but that's an example of not being self-compassionate. So, first, Brené Brown.
You don't have to say her last name.
I know, but it sounds better that we do say it.
Oh, we say it the same way? Okay.
Well, that's what we decided, right?
Relationship goals.
Yeah. So she talks about perfectionism getting in the way of wholehearted living. And so she says, perfectionism is not the same thing as striving to be your best. Perfectionism is not about healthy achievement and growth. It's about the belief that if we live perfect, look perfect, and act perfect, we can minimize or avoid the pain of blame, judgment, and shame. It's a shield. It's a 20-ton shield that we lug around, thinking it will protect us, when in fact, it's the thing that's preventing us from taking flight, in the sense of blooming, I think, from like not taking flight and running away. Then she also says, perfectionism is not self-improvement. Perfectionism is about trying to earn approval and acceptance. Most perfectionists were raised being praised for achievement and performance. And somewhere along the way, they picked up this idea that I am what I accomplish and how well I accomplish it. So I think in that way, I relate to perfectionism. I am what I accomplish.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm like, yeah, I don't know, I'm this weird mix of both, I think.
Yeah. I think something that maybe helped me break out of this, like, perfectionism, whenever it kind of crops up, is just kind of realizing, if I look back at myself of, like, even 5 years ago, I'm like, wow, I thought some really dumb things back then, right? Like, I've just, like, I have actually grown a lot since then.
And thought you were right back then.
I thought I was right back then. So it's like, if I'm right now, I'm like, oh, I got to do it this way, because that's the only right way to do it. It's like, well, maybe in 5 years I'll look back and say, that's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So you can hold it a bit more loosely when you realize that not just that maybe someone else might disagree with you, but it's like, you're going to disagree with yourself when you have more information and more experience.
So you know what I'm thinking.
Okay.
No, you don't.
No, I don't.
You're not looking back at me and being like, oh, I wish I hadn't picked her.
No.
Please. I should have asked you that on Twitter.
I can answer that on open air. I don't care. I agree with that decision. I like that guy that married you. He made a good call.
Good.
And that's what goes so far.
I was looking for her definition. I was like, oh, it's the four paragraphs of italics.
Yeah.
So if you've been following along, you know about the ongoing discussion about italics. So I'm not going to read the entire four paragraphs. I'm going to try and summarize her entire definition. She says it's the most requested definition on her blog, but this was like back in 2009.
So a decade ago.
A decade?
At least.
Yeah, okay. Perfectionism is a self-destructive and addictive belief system that fuels this primary thought. If I look perfect, live perfectly, and do everything perfectly, I can avoid or minimize the painful feelings of shame, judgment, and blame. Perfectionism is self-destructive simply because there's no such thing as perfect. Perfection is an unattainable goal. Additionally, perfectionism is more about perception. We want to be perceived as perfect. Again, this is unattainable. There's no way to control perception regardless of how much time and energy we spend trying. Perfectionism is addictive because when we invariably do experience shame, judgment, and blame, we often believe it's because we weren't perfect enough. So rather than questioning the faulty logic of perfectionism, we become even more entrenched in our quest to live, look, and do everything just right. Feeling shamed, judged, and blamed, and the fear of these feelings, are realities of the human experience. Perfectionism actually increases the odds that we'll experience these painful emotions and often leads to self-blame. It's my fault, I'm feeling this way because, quote, I'm not good enough, end quote. Yeah. Okay, so I did end up reading the whole four paragraphs.
I like to listen to her.
She's sweet. So she says, to overcome perfectionism, we need to be able to acknowledge our vulnerabilities to the universal experience of shame, judgment, and blame. Develop shame resilience and practice self-compassion. So we talked about shame resilience yesterday.
Yeah.
And we are going to talk about self-compassion today. She has a side note and she says she's like, she doesn't think that people are like all, or that there are some perfectionists and some people aren't. She thinks it kind of like exists on a continuum. So I guess that maybe is where I fit into that, where I'm like, well, I guess we're all on a continuum.
Yeah.
So she gives this example of how she started to work on her perfectionism. So, okay, I guess this is an example of body image, because she's a woman and a lot of women struggle with that. So she gives the difference between a perfectionism self-talk and healthy striving self-talk. So perfectionist self-talk is like, ugh, nothing fits, I'm fat and ugly, I'm ashamed of how I look, I need to be different than I am right now to be worthy of love and belonging. Although I don't know if anybody actually says that to themselves. They look in the mirror and be like, if only I looked more like this, I would be worthy of love and belonging.
I'm not sure as many words, but I think people do say things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh, that's not how I imagine myself. But the next thought isn't like... But any
number of other things, though, you could pick up and be like, if you know, I don't have this level of achievement in my career, people don't respect me.
Yeah.
Right? I won't belong in my peer group, or I won't, you know.
That's true.
Yeah.
So that was the perfectionist self-talk. Now the healthy striving self-talk is, I want this for me. I want to feel better and be healthier. The scale doesn't dictate if I'm loved and accepted. If I believe that I am worthy of love and respect now, I will invite courage, compassion, and connection into my life. I want to figure this out for me. I can do this. Mm. Yeah. So that's like different. One is like super negative. One is like there's a healthy way to do this thing that I want to change.
Yeah.
Okay. So she asks this question. If we want to live and love with our whole hearts, how do we keep perfectionism from sabotaging our efforts? What do you think, Willie? You're looking at the answer now, but if you hadn't looked, based on what we've been talking about with everything we've learned so far with Brené Brown.
Sorry, Brené Brown. First off, call her Brené Brown. Yeah, I think if we want to keep perfection from sabotaging our efforts, I don't know, like, I think for me it's like just it's like the, from earlier, to be authentic, right? And so to be genuine of where you're at right now.
Okay.
Right? So I think a lot of it's just living in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like, obviously we're talking about self-compassion today, too, of, like, you can only be authentic if you actually know who you are, right? If you're paying attention to who you are right now.
Yeah. And she also talks about, like, just telling your story. And so that means, I guess, being honest about where you're at.
Yeah.
So, okay, this is what she actually says. In her research, the people who were, she said, engaging the world from a place of authenticity and worthiness, they had common things with regard to perfectionism. So first, they spoke about their imperfections in a tender and honest way without shame and fear. And second, they were slow to judge themselves and others. They appeared to operate from a place of we're all doing the best we can. This blows my mind. Like, I can't even, like, just reading this, she says they spoke about their imperfections in a tender and honest way. Like, I feel like I cannot be farther from that. It just feels like I can't even, part of me is even like, why would you even do that?
Can you just go, oh, my imperfections in a tender and honest way? I know they're pretty rare, right? Because I'm very nearly perfect, but.
Yes, actually, I can speak in the, because I.
In a tender way? And honest?
Depends which ones they are. I can speak honestly about your imperfections. Well, I guess, yeah, because, like, when you're hard on yourself, I'm like, okay, but why would you do that? Like, that's not, like, that's not an honest way to see, or, like, that's not helpful. Like, but, and that's the thing that I've noticed about myself is that it's, like, it's very easy for me to be compassionate towards other people, but then, I mean, it's, I've taken, you know, I've been through therapy and realized that, like, I have this really, like, abnormally high level of, or, like, standard for myself, which makes no sense because I would never put it on anyone else. And I wouldn't want them to put it on themselves.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, I think for me, too, and we'll get into this later, it's part of it is realizing that other people are also having a hard experience, too. Right, and so once you realize that, then it's easier for you to say, "Oh yeah, it's not going well for me right now." Right?
Yeah.
So when you realize everyone's kind of doing hard things or carrying a heavy load, then it's okay for you to say, "Actually, this is difficult for me."
For me too. Yeah. Yeah. So that idea of we're all doing the best we can, like I think I realized that, like partly through therapy, that. My high standard, like I didn't think I was judgmental of others, but realizing that I had such a high, I was treating myself that way, it was just sort of naturally flowed that I would probably be treating other people similarly. And I didn't know it, but it was like deep down, I was like stuffing down this like judgmentalism. Is that the word? And so just this idea of we're all doing the best we can, I think is something that I need to continually remind myself. Like, I mean, motherhood has helped me do that because. Like, it's really, really tough. And, you know, when my girlfriends are, like, struggling and they message me and be like, this is my day and I serve cereal. And I'm like, good for you. Like, we're all doing our best, you know?
Yeah.
That's helped me grow in that.
Yeah.
Because I know that that's what I would say to them. So I should say that to myself.
Yeah. 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 So speak to yourself the way you speak to other people.
Yeah. So.
Unless you're mean to everyone. Hopefully then, someone in your life will tell you you're just mean.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, didn't we talk about that the other day? Do unto others, or like, love your neighbor as yourself, or whatever.
Well, yeah. Also, like, you gotta kind of love yourself too.
Yeah, that's the idea. Is we, anyways. So, yeah. She talks about perfectionism, then she moves on to self-compassion.
Yeah.
so she says there. She quotes this researcher who has the self-compassion research lab at the University of Texas at Austin. And her research looks at three elements, which are self-kindness, common humanity, and mindfulness.
Do you think University of Texas at Austin's like a real place?
Yes, but I'm
is
not.
Is it like a steakhouse too? Or is it like a real university?
I was thinking like self-compassion research lab. Like, that sounds like.
Sure.
Is that really something you could study?
Yeah.
But this is why we need self-compassion, is because we're not very nice. So,
I guess they have universities in Texas.
Right? They do. It's not just, it's not just
oil.
Like oil and beef.
Big hair.
Ag college.
Okay. So, but she has a self-compassion inventory, sort of like test.
Yeah.
So we took it, and we both passed.
Barely, in some sides.
Yeah, or I don't think you're supposed to ace it. I'm not sure how it works.
Yeah, everybody, yeah, whatever.
Everyone needs compassion. Okay. Should we read out our scores, or just we'll read out our scores selectively?
I will read out my bad scores.
That's interesting. I was going to do the same. That's an interesting commentary on who we are. Okay, so it kind of rates you on these different categories of self-kindness, self-judgment, common humanity, isolation, mindfulness, over-identification. Yeah, and that's it. Yeah. So the way it works is, you kind of get a score on each of these. And I mean, it's self-evaluated, so take everything with a grain of salt, right? Because who knows if we were telling the truth or not. Certainly you don't. So what came up for me, on all these different kind of aspects of self-compassion, so I scored very low on that sense of common humanity, and also very, very poorly on isolation. And so what that meant, like, that sense of common humanity is the sense of, like, hey, like, other people are also having having just as hard of a time with their life as you are, right? Like, their life isn't more put together on the inside. So inside, they're feeling just the same things as you are, even if they look really put together on the outside. And then isolation just means that, like, I kind of go through life thinking I'm all on my own.
Yeah.
And then you actually had similar scores on those
ones. Yes, I had similar scores, almost identical.
Yeah.
For both common humanity and, oh no, not, and isolation. But I also had a really low score on, a pretty low score on over-identification. I don't really, like, not really sure what that means, but, or two is, like, on the low end.
No, this one.
Self-judgment. Knowing that I actually have grown in the area of self-compassion over the last couple of years. So to have that high a score on self-judgment, like, what was your self-judgment? Three.
I don't know.
Yeah, I probably, like, was almost at the top end of self-judgment formerly. So, like, really hard on myself.
What does that one even mean, though?
Being mean to myself, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, common humanity, it means common humanity recognizes the suffering and feelings of personal inadequacy are part of the shared human experience, something we all go through rather than something that happens just to me alone. So when we are high on, poor scores of common humanity and isolation, we think, like, it happens to me and I'm the only one that happens to this and no one else can feel the same.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Or when it happens to other people, they just know how to deal with it
better
than I do. That's what I took as. Right? It's like, yes, other people deal with the same situation as I do, but they're just better people in this situation, right? Like, you know, they...
they're smarter.
Their kids wake up 3 times in the night, and they go to work, and they're fine. When I go to work, and I'm a basket case.
Yeah.
Or their kids wake up 3 times in the night, and they wake up. Whereas I just sleep through it. Jess tells me I'm not supposed to tell people that story.
Well, you know, it's fine.
Sure.
You're allowed to. One of us has got to sleep.
One of us has got to.
Ideally.
One of us. I'm not convinced that either of us has to wake up. I think it's a lark, but we'll see. Maybe we should cut that out.
There's also one about mindfulness, and she says that mindfulness means that we're not over-identifying or exaggerating our feelings. So just being, like, aware. I think both of us scored
decently on mindfulness, where it's like, you kind of recognize or, like, things are kind of out of control.
Yeah. That was crazy to realize that I'm still high on self-judgment.
Okay. Here's a question, because we're, like, we have poor scores for isolation, which this is maybe just a silly pun. But how do we avoid isolation during social isolation that we're practicing right now during coronavirus?
Yeah. Well, I think I have a group chat. A couple group chats have been helpful with me because all the moms are being like, they're like, well, it's 9 a.m. and we've all started crying. Like, so it's just like, we all know that it's just people are being honest about how their days are really going.
Yeah.
And then it's, I mean, social media is helpful and it's unhelpful. Like, you know, that, did you see that like, day schedule that was going around at the beginning of it? And everybody's like, let's try this for homeschooling. And then, like, by day three, a couple other people got it real. And they're like, you know, by 9 a.m., your children have already watched 3 hours of TV. You know, like, that day schedule.
Yeah.
There's a
or it's just Fight Club. I think that's
just Fight Club,
is.
Yeah. That's what ours.
And
our house is like that.
Timmy's quite tough for a 10-month old.
He has a helmet now, though.
Yeah, it really helps.
Somebody asked about this. He has a helmet now because he had some, like, flat
spots. His head's
really
lumpy, and we're very vain.
He has some flat spots that were kind of actually pushing his head out in the front a bit. So,
yeah.
Anyways.
It's all the doctor's orders.
Yeah.
So, this is just...
But
I
it
mean,
protects us from his violent brothers.
He made his braces. Yeah, I think it is helping him a little bit right now. Keep him safe.
It actually makes me feel more compassionate to myself as a mother as he gets beaten up by his brother.
Yeah.
So
only one brother beats him up, but
it's
who will not be named?
So
how do prices stop isolation during social isolation? So,
but what so
it's just
do?
Like
I
yeah, I think for
me,
what do I need to do? Well, I think actually social media actually does help for me because I can always see other people that are reacting much more poorly than I am right now. I'm just like, wow, look at that guy.
Is that really the
oh? What?
It just makes me think of that like the parable in the Bible where the Pharisees or whatever, like, geez, like, thank God I'm not like that guy.
No, but I think, I guess, I'm not claiming too much sanctification here, I guess. But I think seeing, like, how hard it is on other people, I'm like, so I was talking to someone recently, and, because I had like, some challenges with anxiety in the past, and, like, so I am anxious right now, but I've had this type of anxiety, I experienced it like a month ago or like 3 months ago at like different points at work or whatever, or with the kids. And so I'm like, oh, well, like I can deal with this. But then other people right now, just like the world's kind of going crazy and they're just like, this is too much right now, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I can see where I'm at in that a bit.
Right.
And know that, oh no, I know where I'm at. I know what my capacities are right now. In relation to other people, I can be sympathetic to them, but also kind of recognize, like, oh, I need to be careful right now because I'm getting tired, I'm getting worn down.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The other one.
Can I
yeah.
see that too?
Yeah. The other one we had in common was common humanity. So how do we practice common humanity? I guess when we can't see
anyone else.
Yeah, when we can't go talk to anyone other than.
Well, I think we all are sharing the same situation.
Yeah,
because
we're all very
vulnerable
to the...
No, I mean, we're all literally locked in the
yeah.
house. And so, it actually, I feel like there's a unique, unique sense of common humanity right now when it's like, you know that everyone else is going stir crazy in their own ways. Except for all the introverts who are, like, living their best life now, right now.
Yeah. I'm sure they are.
Or the ones who are like, wow, everybody else is freaking out, but this is just my normal life.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, too, in recognizing common humanity is like there's obviously things that are obviously similar to all of us, that we're all in our house, but everyone's kind of experiencing different things at different speeds, too. And so that's part of common humanity is that everyone has kind of their own challenge or their own battle, right?
Yeah.
So for me, it's just like not being able to go outside is like I do get stir crazy. I need to go outside every day, you know?
Yeah.
Like. I walk to work because of that. Normally.
Yeah.
During a normal work day. And so for me, that's pretty heavy. But for other people, it is like the more the social interaction, or it's they have people that they really want to be with right now that they just can't.
Can't,
they can't
like
go and
family
see.
Or whatever.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that that has helped me grow in self-compassion, and this is, it's a tool that can work negatively sometimes, and I think in the past it has been for me, but the question is, like, when you're going through something, or just generally, like, when you're feeling hard on yourself, is to ask yourself, what does Jesus have to say to me? Like, what does the Bible have to say about this? I think the way it can work negatively, obviously, I need to be careful because it's the Bible and it's profitable for all things, but is that we can I have, you know, in a said, I in the past might have said something like, oh, well, like, you're a sinner, like, you can do better, right? In the power of Jesus and the Spirit. But, like, I think what we can actually also do, maybe more importantly, is consider, like, the, what are the compassionate things that God, like, has to say to us. Mm. You know, and in that sense, remember the gospel, like, you know, Jesus has lived the perfect life. You know, I need to, like, show up and have a relationship with him, right? Like
yeah,
the,
yeah.
What is the...
Yeah, because he's perfect. Yeah, what we enter into is the relationship,
not the striving.
Not the earning.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, because
yeah.
My job is to, like, love God and enjoy him forever, right?
Yeah.
That's the chief end of man, according to one of those catechisms. So, like...
Yeah, I think even kind of what you're getting at, like, perfectionism doesn't get you anywhere. It doesn't mean, like, you just stop... trying, or you stop
because that's the other end of it. Because
I think even as a Christian, it's like, yeah, like Jesus is perfect in our place,
yeah,
and he brings into relationship. But it's like, yeah, but it's so that we can be healthy, right?
Yeah,
and so that we keep growing and changing and like getting better, you know. But from a place of like, yeah, from new life,
yeah,
and not from like,
trying
to get stuck, like fix everything all on your own.
Yeah, and I think it like I used to. Get into like I've toyed with life hacking and all this kind of stuff to just in some sort of effort of like perfectionism, but like I don't know, spin off of sanctification too, but now I'm learning about common rule like kind of practices that can bring a sense of steadiness, I think, rather than I don't know, that help me be more mindful, I guess. Like, because I'm in that, I'm communing with God more frequently, inviting him into the difficult spaces in my day.
Yeah.
With my kids, praying frequently, having a set time for those kinds of things. And then that helps me to not be so hard on myself all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Anyways, so I think that's all for us for today.
I think.
Obviously, the chapter always ends with kind of dig deep, so get deliberate. And her idea for that was to go to this self-compassion.org and do their self-compassion test and then get inspired.
She did this quote and it said, she quotes Leonard Cohen's song. He says, they're cracking everything. That's how the light get in. Which reminds me of that verse about the jar, like jars of clay.
The band?
No.
Okay.
But that's the verse that talks about we're
being
jars. Oh,
like, we hold this treasure in jars of clay.
Yeah.
Like, we are fragile.
Yeah, we're fragile.
We have a powerful message from God.
Yes, or that, like, basically, we are weak, but that's how Jesus is glorified. And then, get going. She says, today I'm going to believe that showing up is enough.
Yeah, or today I'm going to believe that sitting in my house is enough.
Today I'm going to believe that cereal every meal is enough.
Yeah.
And I can't even. Sorry. This is going really long, but I just really struggle with that. So I guess this is one of mine that I'm just going to really have to work on.
Okay. Well, we're stuck in the house together for a little bit longer at least. Like at least 3 more days, right? There's 3 days left of the quarantine. Because a quarantine comes from...
Isn't it 14 days?
40.
Are you trying to be Latin now again?
No, I have no idea what I'm saying.
Okay.
But we're going to say this podcast is enough.
This podcast is enough for what?
For today.
Oh, for today, yes.
For today is its troubles. Let go of perfectionism and send it up to you guys. Hope you're doing well. Stay healthy.